Hello, this is the Dot Matrix, and I'm Sean.
I'm Justin.
And we are back. First podcast for 2011.
Yeah, it's been a while. And speaking of being in a while, we are sitting in the second home for the Dot Matrix, which is my place. I think we've only recorded here once.
It's like the vacation home.
Vacation? Okay, sorry. It's the rental property.
Yeah. It's good, though. It's good to mix it up. I mean, we always talk about being on location, what, for 3 years now?
Yes. 3 years.
Late 2007 we started, so.
Wow.
Just over 3 years. And we're just going to get back to it. Kind of fell off the horse a bit.
Yeah, but we had so much going on, though, right?
Because we're really busy people. Whoa. That really clipped. That was awesome.
Because we kept talking about doing, we'll do one show, one podcast before the end of the year. We'll summarize the year. And, that never happened. We were going to do one about our going guys weekend out, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we can't really talk too much about it because what happens in a guy's weekend out stays.
Stays.
But like I was saying to Tara when I saw her a week after, or even that night when we all got back, said, yeah, right. We tea shop hopped all around that Saturday night. We had nothing but all sorts of different teas.
Very strong teas.
Yeah, she didn't believe a word of it.
No. Well, she's very clever, smart cookie, that girl, so.
Yes.
But we, you know, tried to make it convincing and believable, and how they have really big pours there. They pour a lot of tea. Really strong tea. We closed out a lot of tea shops that night.
We did. a particular Japanese tea place.
We were very likable, fun people. Not like those two guys who went to that Kamloops subway and tore up the place. Did you hear about that?
I saw like something I on one of those tickers or something, but I didn't really hear much about it. So. Ugh,
poor guy. One guy is like 2 a.m, doors are about, are you know, he's starting to close down.
Yeah.
Customers are just finishing up, so doors are still open. Two drunk guys come in and just, the guy behind the counter refused them service, and the guys, as drunk as they were, just start flipping out, throwing bags of chips at him. They knocked over all the tills, you know,
really?
Just destroyed the place. The cops caught them soon enough. But, you know, that's what that made me think of, because we were not like that at all. We were happy, fun-loving.
That's right. And was that on YouTube or just on, like, security cameras or something like that?
Well, I mean, the video's from the security camera, but they're showing it on the BCTV or...
On the news, okay.
Global. Speaking of which, we'll come back to that in a second, but
okay.
I couldn't believe it's like full color, like it was pretty good footage, you know.
Wow.
And you could tell exactly what these guys look like, these knobs, you know.
Right.
And yeah, well, they didn't hurt the guy, I don't think, but I mean, after a while you just see the guy just walk away from them. He just walks
like,
to
whatever.
The back. He's yeah. Like, screw this, man. I don't get paid enough to deal with these assholes.
Right.
Anyway, that's what that made me think of it.
So we're episode 38 is what we're on right now.
Yeah.
38.
It's an interesting number, 38. Not quite 40, but...
Okay.
Past 30.
Sure.
Past 35.
Get deep about 38. That's fine. I'm just going to say a number just because, but you know.
Two words. 38 BFD. Do you know what PFD is?
No.
Big fucking deal.
Oh.
Which, the first time I saw that was at Men's Health magazine when they had Lance Armstrong on the cover. And he had a plain shirt, right? So he's just sitting down, looking at the camera, snap photo, it's on the cover. But they photoshopped 38 BFD. On his shirt because he just turned 38, and as if that's no fucking big deal, right? And he was like, what are they doing? That wasn't on my shirt. They just threw that on there, right? Anyway.
I love stories about Lance Armstrong. So you want to go back to something about Global TV?
Well, just about news in general.
Okay, sure.
Because one of my favorite newscasters of all time just endorsed Christy Clark.
You're talking about Pamela Martin. And she's, she's going to be on her membership campaign or something like that? Or she's leading the membership drive for her.
The membership drive, yep.
Wow. Well, you got to do something if you get kicked off television.
Do you think it was that? Well, they had, what, a tenth of the viewers that Global did.
Well, everything's shaking out, right? And I just figure, like, who's gonna watch her back as Gloria Macarenko on CBC? Because they got rid of Ian Handsome Man-Thing. Mm-hmm. He went out for Tony Parsons, right? So she's got to look out, you know? She's the only one left there.
So he left because Tony came in?
Well, the way they spun it was that Ian Handsome, I can't even say his real name.
Hannah
Mansing. Was moving back or to do more reporting for The National. Because, you know, I think they'd seen whether he could be the next host of The National, which he totally should be.
He totally should be.
But yeah, so that's how they spun it. But, I mean, if you have a chance to get Tony Parsons, you take it.
You find he's not very quick, though. He loses his wording a lot.
And yeah, well, I mean,
he should be retired.
He should be retired and resting on the laurels of a wonderful career. But, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, retirement means different things these days, and it has a different stigma to it than it used to. And a lot of people just want to stay active, and we're, you know, living healthier and, you know, what is, you know, 65 or whatever is the normal, around the normal age for retirement isn't what 65 used to be, right? Like, yeah. Jack Donaghy always says that on 30 Rock.
But he could just play tennis and go on trips. I mean, he could volunteer somewhere. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things you can do. He's like a hockey player, you know? They want Trevor Linden to come back. I mean, yeah,
it's kind of, well, it's kind of like a Jay Leno, basically.
Yes, it is.
But,
you want your show back? Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, you know.
That was so bad, but still so good.
That was awful.
But when did, like, the whole BC Liberal Party thing
show up on my radar?
Well, no. Well, I didn't even know when Pamela... I didn't even know Pamela Martin had stopped being the anchor. And then I found out, you know...
Oh, really?
That it was all happening. Because I never watched that
channel, right? Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I'm
I don't
one
know
of
either.
The 9/10 of the viewers who watch something else. But, But yeah, I guess...
How did that all happen, or...?
Yeah, I guess she must have... in terms of Pamela Martin and Christy Clark, they must know each other for years, I guess.
I think... More so in the last few years because their jobs were a little more similar, you know? Like, she
right,
does the radio show.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess what I find really uncomfortable, and it's happened in a bunch of different places, when you have people, and I guess, you know, people are people and people have their points of view, and so our anchors are also people.
Sure.
You know, but when you think about journalists, right, and they're supposed to get the facts and be balanced on all sides, and particularly anchors, right?
Yeah.
And suddenly, like... You know, you now, after all these years of trying to hide what your politics are, or just trying to not make a big deal of it, you know, the first thing you do is you basically say, I'm a BC Liberal Party person, and I'm gonna, you know, help Christy Clark get her membership.
Hands on.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just sort of like, you know, Peter Kent, who used to host The National years ago, and now he's, you know, the sham Ministry of the Environment. For the Conservative government, like, it's so funny.
Because
when that happened, they showed a story on the National, and they showed, you know, Peter Kim, the anchor who was on the National, who himself back in the 80s did one of the first stories about global warming, and how it's going to be a huge issue, is now leading the Ministry of the Environment in a government that has the environment the lowest part of its priority list, right?
And our good friend Derek posted about that on Facebook today.
Oh, did he? Okay.
He posted that exact video that you're talking about. Mm. And I had no idea. Like, I heard he was a journalist or something before.
Yeah.
And so I watched part of it, like the first few minutes. And I was like, this is unbelievable. Because, and like Derek said, he sounds like an oil executive now.
Right.
I mean, just today, he's like, this is ethical oil. You know, like, it's amazing the type of immediate branding and spinning that they're laying on this, you know. And they're not for a few years, they're not going to do anything. He said this, they're not going to do anything to jeopardize the economic impact that this has for our country. And I'm like, I can't believe, I mean, I know people are up in arms, but I can't believe people aren't marching in the streets right now. Like, it's happening in front of our eyes. Like, you know, we look back on stuff like this sometimes in the past and we think that was awful. Like, right. But we, you know, like, he's just saying all this crazy shit on the first day on the job. And he's, I don't know what happens to you. I guess you get more right wing the older you get.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, the job is you're supposed, as an anchor, you're supposed to report the story as it's been provided to you by the reporter, the producer, what have you, right?
Right.
But, you know, sometimes the anchor, like, I think Peter Mandry is, like, the lead editor. Like, he's, like, the man. Like, you know, he does more of the, sometimes the anchors does choose what stories in what order and that sort of thing, too.
Right.
But, you know, and I think in some respects, I mean, I don't know this, but you think about, you know, where the environment stands in the current federal government, which is, you know, fairly low. I don't think anyone would disagree with that in terms of protecting the environment from things like global warming. And so it makes sense in some ways have a person who is well-trained to deliver the message that he's supposed to deliver. And an anchor has that ability, you know.
Totally.
And you think about those who have had it, like, you know, like the federal government choosing not to go ahead to approve the environmental impact study or whatever it was of the mine and of the mine that was proposed in Williams Lake. You know, like that in some ways, you know, it basically killed the 450 jobs that would have happened in Williams Lake because of the environmental impacts. It's probably a little bit counter to the whole message of we don't want to do anything in the environment that will hurt the economic recovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's part of the reason why that minister is no longer there, right? Mm-hmm. So you need someone who doesn't have to do a lot of work on the file, but who can be up there and keep the message going, right?
Right.
So, and maybe he's got the right skills for that. Maybe he isn't supposed to say anything other than that, right? So,
well, I think, yeah. I think you can't, like, to me, when, if the environment ministry, to me, just, maybe I've got it wrong, but it's like Ministry of Social Services or like children, you know?
Yeah.
They're there to look out for kids.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what that suggests.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the Ministry of the Environment, it's, you're putting someone in that position to focus on that.
Yes.
Thing, right? And, but if you're putting someone in there that's immediately just going to come out and be very resistant to any type of positive, you know.
Right.
He's not even making it rosy, like, or trying to, you know, make it rosier than it is. It's funny.
But you're right. I think, I mean, the purpose of having ministries, you know, I mean, you're having people focus on different portfolios who actually in many ways have counter objectives. You know, like the Ministry of Industry will have very different objectives than a Ministry of Environment, or the Minister of Environment should. Mm-hmm. But the way it is now, you're right, it's totally not what it should be. The Minister of Environment is almost a junior Minister of Industry, right? Like,
completely.
You know, and that's not, I mean, there, like, you know, you think about sort of, I mean, some ministries are supposed to be complementary, but in some sense, you need people who are strong and will be strong on their portfolio, because you don't want, you know, one, you want that, I don't know, necessarily dissenting point of view, but a view that's different, that is, that puts that part of government first. Because sometimes when defense is first, you can't have health first, mm-hmm. you know, and then vice mm-hmm. versa, and all these different things, right? So you're absolutely right. I mean, it's not, they're not using the ministries in the way I would think this whole structure was put in place to do, so.
Yeah, it's very odd. So we'll have to come back to that as, you know.
But tell me, BC 2030. Who, well, a little bit of context for those of you listening to us across the galaxy. but, Sean sends me this email, like, I think 2 days ago or something. Want to go to this event with me? It's $10. Oh, I got to give you $10. I only have $20, though.
Oh, that's okay. Whatever.
If you have $10.
Just buy me a drink. It's fine. Let's have cocktails first.
We're going to need it. sorry, that was not right to say, to joke. But anyways, all it was just that little note and a link to an Eventbrite site. So I go to it, and I was like,
"What the hell is this?"
the title was the next BC's next leaders meet the next whatever. It was it was just kind of a weird self-referential title.
I had to read it 10 times to really get it. Yeah,
and. And basically, it's, you know, in our province here in British Columbia, there's a leadership race for both political parties, but the one that actually has candidates is the Liberal one, and their vote is February something, right? February 20-something.
February 26th, I think, yeah.
And all the candidates, like, I just thought it was like an all-candidates meeting, right? Just like they'll debate the issues and talk about the differences, but it's not really that. It's actually some sort of event. I don't know what they're going to do there, but it's about visioning the future of the province of British Columbia for the year 2030.
Right? I have a feeling it's not going to be, you know, like debate-like, but I think, you know, we'll probably hear from all the candidates. The kind of their vision is kind of what I'm getting the impression. And then, and I understand that we'll have the chance to interact with these people.
Over hors d'oeuvres, I hope.
I hope I know. I hope so too.
5:30 to 8:30, man. Like,
it's like, hello. That's eating time.
I mean, yeah. But it was interesting because I don't mind. Like, and I'm glad to go. I'm very curious to go.
Yeah.
But what was really interesting, which is that I emailed back, you're like, how is this a nonprofit organization? Like, I mean, it's, you know, it's an event, and maybe, you know, it's an event called BC 2030, but. How is an event an actual organized a nonprofit organization? So I don't know that, and maybe that's going to be a series of events over time. And
well, I think they've done it before.
Oh, have they?
I don't think this is the first time.
Oh, okay, I just assumed it was some sort of like BC Liberal Party way of just structuring an event and somehow needing to do it as a nonprofit. Like I had no idea. That's why I asked you, like, what? Nonprofit? What? Because I get...
Well, it's kind of right up your alley, right? Yeah. So you got to check it out.
I do wonder if I'll see anyone at this event that I know through my work. Because by the very nature of people who work in community nonprofit organizations, it's... I mean, there are some. It's good surprising, chance. Actually. Sometimes you see people who might have a more right-wing point of view. But most people who work in community nonprofit... are very much on the progressive left side.
Oh, totally.
Because, you know, when you're working on things like, you know, emergency care in the downtown east side or seniors long-term care, some of the organizations and thinking that I've been working on late that come top of mind, I mean, things are never, you know, clear cut. Those are always difficult, very layered, complex issues. Mm-hmm. And... So for someone to work in the field and to understand it as complex, by nature means you're more progressive and left-leaning. You know, that's just the way it is.
It is, and if you're on the other side, the compassion factor just seems to go down. Like, I don't know what it's about.
Well, I truly do think compassion in a more general nature comes out of understanding that people have different needs.
It's empathy, right?
You don't get much empathy if you're very clearly this is right and this is wrong.
Yeah,
that doesn't provide for much room for that.
Yeah, I totally agree. So it'll be very interesting. I'm glad that we could do this together, and because we'll have lots to report on, I'm sure, because I'm already decided who I want to be the leader. So
are is your sister going to be there?
I don't know. I have no idea. I have to talk to her about it.
How did you hear about these events? Someone sent it to you or something?
Elaine sent it to me.
Well, Elaine sent it to you. Is she going to come too?
No. No. No, she kickboxes like on that night.
She's like, you boys go.
Yeah, it's... I mean, Elaine's definitely had more of a political point of view in recent years, I think. She's probably from listening to my bullshit all the time, but she she definitely is, you know, has an ear in, more tuned to kind of the goings on that, right. That I mean, I think just because of just with the internet and all that, just getting, we're just so more connected with what's happening now, especially right. In the political arena, right? Because yep. Even just a few years ago or more, I mean, well, just look at the last election. I just kind of went by and really low turnout, and people right. Are like, oh, same people, whatever. I'm not going to pay attention to it. But especially with the craziness with the NDP of the last couple of months,
right.
And especially since Gordon Campbell resigned, there's been a lot of shit happening, and a lot of new ideas coming around, you know, and like
voting
when you're age.
When you're 16, or giving people a lottery, you vote, you put your name in a lottery to get a tax-free year or something like that.
Yeah. You know what? I read a letter that someone wrote in that was against that thought
right.
In the paper, and they explained it in an interesting way that I never thought, because it's really a sad day when you have to coax people into voting.
Right, right.
Because this person, I don't know what age group this person was or anything like that in the background, but they said, you know, this might sound like kind of a cliched example, but it's like, of all the people that have fought in the previous wars and right now in Afghanistan, like our soldiers and all that, like, they didn't die so we could coax people into voting with a lottery and tax incentives or whatever it's going to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's such a crucial right that we have to cast our vote that it insults those who have died for us to be able to do that. Or even for women. I mean, it was less than 100, what was it, 100 years ago that women started voting in
less,
Canada?
Yeah,
less probably, yeah. Right? Like, just that right there, yeah. Like, just the whole taking it for granted.
Well, you know, and I actually don't mind 16, the idea of going to 16, because I think if you are old enough to handle, you know,
driving, yeah,
and large machinery like that, you should be able to vote. And I think what it does is actually, I mean, and 16-year-olds are typically, for the most part, still in school. And if an election happens in the middle of the year, it's a great opportunity for social studies classes to talk about it and actually have a venue that, you know, you're either forced to talk about it or you talk
totally.
About it, right?
Totally.
And you just get more exposure.
Yeah.
So I'm totally, I think that's totally fine. I don't agree with the lottery thing, get free to, you know, like, that's a little bit, it's moving it towards, I think it's exactly as you said. Some of the other things were that I was hearing about was, like exploring, you know, voting online, and people can do things on Twitter and Facebook and all these social medias that we're not using technology, and I agree that we're not using technology in the democratic process as well as we could be. And those who are doing it really well are those not on the political fringe, but on the fringe of what the core dialogue that takes place. Like, you know, it's like,
yeah,
those people, those conversations are happening, but it doesn't impact the actual policy that happens for some reason. Or like, actually, I don't even know if that's true, but it just doesn't seem as connected with the regular political discourse is I guess what I'm trying to say from my intent. But to make voting as easy as you go to your computer and you click it, you know, I agree with the people who say, you know, that also relegates voting to something more habitual, when it actually is an important act that has some ritual to it. You know, going to a gymnasium, writing an X and putting it into that box.
Yes.
That's part of what makes it not magical, but gives it the prominence and importance that it is. I mean, you physically are allowed to take 4 hours off of work so you can vote. Like, you are allowed to do that, and you should do it, right? I mean, not take four hours, but you know, people don't realize that there's your mandatory, your employer has to let you do that.
Is that province, every province? I don't know.
I don't know if it's national or provincial, but
I think it's
provincial. Yeah. And the other thing was, what was it? Was And people talk about sort of like the do with the long form census issue, right? You know, mandatory voting, and you're not going to put people in jail, like right. the threat of jail if you don't vote or that right. sort of stuff. Is it there? There's mandatory voting. It's illegal to not to vote in various different countries, and mm-hmm. you know, and I think that is such a bunch of baloney because one, no one ever has gone to jail because they didn't fill out the long form census. And no one will go to jail if you say it's mandatory. But what it will do, it will automatically jump the percentage of people who vote from 56% or whatever it is, which is pretty dismal, to at least 78 or 80 or 85%. Because you know what? People just don't like to break the law.
Yeah.
And yeah. it's not coercive. I mean, my God. I mean, yeah. is it coercive? I don't think it is.
No.
And anyone who ever says, oh, it's totally coercive to Canadians, if you ask them, have you ever felt coerced about voting or about filling out the long form census, I guarantee you the majority of people say, oh, no, not me. But theoretically it is, or to people who've emailed me or phoned me. But, you know, like, you have mm-hmm. to have your own opinion, too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think mandatory voting is definitely an option that should be looked at.
Sure.
But paired with that needs to be an option on the ballot box that says no one. Or zero.
Right, completely.
Right? Because I think people kind of feel bad to spoil a ballot or that's to just, right. you know, write a happy face on something. But you should recognize that people voting without any knowledge is still not
it's
democracy.
Not, it's you know? Not contributing, yeah.
Yeah, it's you should be able to get a percentage of, you know, I think it's a great sign that something's wrong, you know, when, you know, it's a sign, good or bad sign, if you get an 85% turnout.
Mm-hmm.
And 25% of everyone who voted clicks, puts like an X no one. To no one.
Right.
Because they have said, "You are none of you are worth my vote, or I will not, or I'm not, you know, informed enough to vote." Either way, that's not a good thing. But at least you know, right?
No, I fully agree, and you get a good idea of numbers, and you really get a good idea of what people are feeling and thinking. You know, because that voluntary census thing is like it's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard the conservatives come up with, and that's a long list. Like that, just hit the ridiculous scale. You know,
yeah.
People
say it's so Canadian, but a thing like statistics can rile up a nation, and it actually, frankly, it is. It did.
Statistics Canada is like they call yeah. me right and. I'm on there for years now, like
really?
For like 2, 3, 4 years, they've been calling me every year about, like every, it's usually every January they call and they do a series of calls.
Okay.
Where I'm on the phone with them for at least a half hour. Like,
you're part of something like the household survey?
Yes.
Or you are.
Household, like income, like all that, really? All that stuff.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah, they've never called me. I would skew the statistics way high.
Like, I don't know how they found me, but no, but so, you know, I've been doing that, but, you know, I got a letter saying, okay, the next series of calls are coming, just so you know, right?
Right.
So I'm like, okay, no big deal. And it, you know, it's actually kind of interesting, like, knowing the questions they ask and what they're mm-hmm. looking for and what, you know, the letters explain why they're asking. And
yeah.
you know, hey, I don't mind.
Yeah.
Like, if this actually means there's an end result to something, like if this forwards some sort of thinking and making things better, then that's great. But you know when they called me, they got my first call for this year. Yesterday morning at 7 a.m.
they called me.
And of course I didn't answer. I was like just waking up, you know, like can you
right.
believe that?
Wow.
And they usually call from Alberta.
Okay.
And so it's just an hour ahead or something, you know. And so I was like, really? Because before, and I had given them the time preferred, which right. was around like 6:30 kind of thing. And they had always done that. And then now they're calling me. The thing is, the woman who left a message on my phone was so sleepy. She was just reading very slowly and just dreamlike, like all the information of when to call back and all that.
Right.
It was so funny. But you know, when I think of the census and I think of the statistics stuff, I think you know, this was stuff set up by a government at some point, yep. right?
Yeah.
A government who had the forethought to be like, okay, you know, if we can get a bunch of people to agree with giving us this information, we can use this to make services and all kinds of stuff better.
Right.
But you have the current government who has this very, like, Reagan-like, you know, Thatcher-like, you know, very rogue kind of extreme kind of thinking of, whoa, they're getting too in our business, you know, like, gotta take the hands off and, you know, very Republican, you know, and I can't believe it, you know, it's because I'm thinking, if you don't like it, if you don't like subjecting the people to it, scrap it. Like, I don't want them to scrap it, but don't do this voluntary bullshit, because no one's going to fill it out if it's voluntary. Right. Like, very few people are going to do that because they know it's not going to help, because if it's like 10% instead of 60% or 70%, they know it's not going to be productive. Like, how is that going to help, right? So you might as well just, it becomes scrapping it anyway.
Yeah.
You know that, I know that. Hundreds of agencies around the country have said that, yet they still, you know, they're so like, we're just going to keep digging ourselves in, you know, and right. be ideological. So that's kind of my federal government rant for the day. But that stuff just like makes my mind boggle.
So you had a list, you said.
Yes. Should we move on to predictions?
Sure. Absolutely.
Well, I had thought, you know, we might talk about, you know, I thought, oh, do we talk about the big things that happened in 2010? I was like, well, everyone does that, right?
Right.
We might want to pick one big thing that we thought was like, you know, the story for you or me or whatever, right. and then we can do predictions. But yeah, I do have a list of predictions. I could.
Yeah, because I you know, as we said, and we set this date, and I knew this date was coming. I knew you were coming over.
Yes.
And you know, see, I can't even think of the word. Proactive as I always am, I prepared nothing, and so I'm just gonna riff on what you say, basically. So
okay.
So why don't we start with the predictions and then see how far we get?
Okay, sure.
And then maybe we'll go to. What's that picture on your iPod
Touch? That's from our hotel room in Seattle.
Oh!
But we won't say anything more about that. Anyway, sorry.
Yes. So you said predictions. So, you know,
okay.
Are they predictions all of one kind of nature, or are they like, or each of them are very different in terms of the kind of category or topic?
They're slightly different in nature. One is very different in nature. But they all involve some current events from the past year and where they're going to go.
Okay.
Mostly political, of course.
Okay. So I say the first one, then and we'll go down the list
on it,
and then I will probably completely agree or completely disagree.
Okay, this will be interesting.
The complaints that we've always had is that we agree too much, which we have been doing pretty much in this episode today. But it's okay.
I know something we disagree on, and it might come up down the line.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Go.
Michael Jackson doctor's trial.
Wow, I didn't think... Okay.
I think this coming year, we're going to see... It started this week, first week of 2011. It was like a pre-trial kind of stuff going on. Pre-trial motions, evidence, and all that kind of stuff. I think we're going to see a lot of developments, more stuff coming out about what actually happened on Michael Jackson's last day, stuff we've already heard.
Is the trial going to actually happen this year?
I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but I think it's a possibility.
Okay.
Because once they go through the pre-trial, then it's just... I don't know if it's a grand jury or something where it's decided, yes, enough evidence to prosecute and all that kind of stuff.
So they haven't laid charges, have they? Or
they've charged him with manslaughter.
Involuntary manslaughter, yeah. Okay. So your prediction is that stuff will happen or think something in particular is going to happen?
I think, no, I wasn't sure exactly what would happen other than we're just going to be hearing about it a lot more. And I think we're going to be kind of, it's like more of those inundate kind of things.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had a crazy trial in Los Angeles since, what, Phil Spector, maybe?
Phil Spector.
And it's about time. It's the new O.J. Simpson thing. We need a trial for this generation, this new generation.
Every few years in Los Angeles, you need a new trial that defines L.A.
And good thing Law and Order is in Los Angeles now. They can actually do an episode based on this.
I know.
Although that show's horrible. But anyways.
So yeah, again, I don't think, you know, I think he'll...
I predict Cato Kaelin will do it. Will have done it. That's my prediction.
I think if it goes to trial, I think it will look bad for the doctor.
When manslaughter, you know, if I had to think and put on my creative Law and Order hat,
yeah,
the situation will unfold and will come out in a way where it's going to be like, he was just cavalier and giving Michael Jackson whatever he wanted. And at some point, he's going to cross that line to manslaughter where he should have known.
Right? Absolutely.
Like, and what the consequences of continually giving him whatever drug or whatever something, right? Yeah.
A hardcore anesthetic.
Yeah, you see that all the time on Law and Order. That's why it's involuntary manslaughter than let's say Murder 2 or whatever. Right. You know, so
I would totally go for Murder 2, but so that's that one.
Okay.
I have 5, so we'll see how far we get. This is number 2.
Oh, for the record, your fan. Yeah. I mean, you said you put it down. I thought you had a piece of paper, but you have it right on your iPod.
Yeah,
very fancy.
Well, I've been thinking them in my head over the past few days, and I thought, you know what? I actually got to just put them down, or I'll forget. You know, I'm very note oriented. Like I have to write it down, or type. I don't like typing notes, but I'm getting more used to it now. So,
well, I've been putting sometimes when I have meetings, and I put it on my calendar. The agenda. So I'm looking at my BlackBerry, talking about looking at the agenda. So people think I'm being rude, but I'm actually following along the agenda of the meeting.
Oh right, yeah. I guess some people would be like not. They wouldn't get that right away. Yeah.
Well, once I actually put notes on the speech that I I was on a panel and I had like 10 minutes to talk, and I put all of my notes on my BlackBerry so I could just read off the BlackBerry. And people thought it was a total generational thing. Because
that's right.
It kind of was, right? It was like,
you and the older ladies. I was joking.
Wow.
It's okay. They love me too.
Number two.
I think North Korea is going to attack South Korea again during this year. And I think... I don't want to say we'll go to war, but I think South Korea will respond. But I think North Korea won't have the balls to take it to full war, like they keep saying. But I think they've attacked twice last year. I think they attacked a couple years before that. I think they're kind of on a pattern here, and I think they're going to attack again.
It's interesting, though, because like the war is not officially over. It's an armistice at the moment. Like I don't know. How does it not...
How do you solve it without going to war?
Or how does it not go to war again if they mm-hmm. attack? You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but, you know, it's a different situation. I mean, the armistice has lasted for so long. Was it, like, 40 years,
over
right?
50 years, yeah.
And, yeah, right, over 50 years. Mm-hmm. And we're in 2011.
We're almost 60 years, yeah.
Wow. But the world is so different. Like, when the armistice happened, you know, North Korea had a whole line of allies.
Right.
Much more than they do now.
Yeah.
And if you believe any of those WikiLeaks cables, China is reluctant to be a public backer of North Korea, but behind the scenes they're like, oh, jeez, you know? Like,
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, the person who's embarrassed about their crazy uncle kind of thing. That's what China is, right? But at least that's what they're saying. But, you know, so like, the thing is, I guess my first thinking was, well, how do you, if North Korea attacks and South Korea responds, and it seems a little bit more elevated than it has been in terms of the other kinds of attacks. I mean, just the way, the kind of reaction it gets from the media, but maybe that's just 24-hour news too, right? But you know, and the reaction seems to be a little bit more heightened. So I just don't, how do they prevent it from just blowing a roof off of this armistice and just going to war?
Yeah.
But then, who would have North Korea's back, really? Like, but I guess, you know, when you think about, I guess, some of the, I mean, I'm not a history person. But, you know, when you think about the, you know, how world wars start, where something happens and someone, because of the treaty, has to now back this, and then and the other one has to back another side, and then it just ends up being a world war.
That's right. Well, alliances happen. Yeah,
But just, there isn't the kind of alliances on the north side anymore, so... I actually think, you know, something's going to happen, and that younger son of his is just going to end up being the leader sooner than he thinks. That's what I think. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, yeah, like, you think the time is up for the old guy. I think that could be very possible, yeah. Well, obviously, they're grooming him, right?
Yes.
And...
They're basting him. Sorry.
Okay, moving on.
Number three.
Yes. Okay, so the Republicans took over the House of Representatives.
Yes.
Today.
John Boehner. Yesterday.
Yesterday.
John Boehner had a gigantic gavel from Nancy Pelosi.
And, that's very cute. Yeah. You know, it's funny, that John Boehner guy, but yeah, sorry, the prediction is, you know, they won't succeed in repealing health care.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a lot harder than they say, because I think it has to go through the Senate as well, which is still Democrat-controlled, as far as I know.
Yes, it's 54 or 53 to something, yeah.
Yeah, it's close, but I know you need a certain majority number, though, in the Senate. Like, I don't think it's, like... 50-50. I think it has to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
50 plus one.
I think there's certain rules.
It's like a 60 or 80% or something.
Well, you need 60 out of the 100 to not, to actually bring a vote to the floor. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know what you need in terms of the vote on the floor. And sometimes it depends on the kind of bill it is, right? Some of the bills can go straight through just by majority. Some have to be more two-thirds or something. Yeah. So it's a complicated thing.
So I don't think... ultimately that they'll succeed, because I think there are a lot of talk, and I don't think they actually really know how to carry it through, and I don't think they really have an alternative. I think, you know, they're all like, okay, well, we're going to cut this, we're going to, you know, we're going to cut taxes, we're going to cut social spending.
Right.
And it's like... Okay, well, that just cancels each other out, and then you're still at the same problem, but probably worse. I think, you know, they're all riding on this high right now of, you know, so-called bringing it back to the people, you know? People have spoken garbage, but, you know, they've got a lot of new elected people who have never been in power before in any kind of role, those Tea Partiers. So I don't think it's... I think Obama's, in relation to that, I think Obama's going to see way more successes this year than he has in the past. Well, since he became president, essentially. He passed a lot of good things. Yes, expensive things, but I think things that will help in the long run. And I think he'll get his mojo back.
Well, he got his mojo back in the last quote-unquote lame duck session, right? All those things that happened.
Well, yeah, and that treaty, that nuclear arms treaty went through.
Yeah, the START treaty... Don't ask, don't tell.
Don't ask, don't tell.
I was so pleased when that finally happened.
I was too.
I had a train of thought on this, but now I've lost it completely. But it's, you know, I just, the one thing I found is really, I was on the New York Times website, and I was listening to John Boehner's comments.
Right.
As first comments as Speaker of the House.
And, right.
And I didn't listen to all of it, but he sort of said at a certain point, after he said all the thank yous.
I know.
Thank you this, thank you that. Thank you to my 11 brothers and sisters and sisters and brothers-in-law. And I'm like, don't tell me you're one out of 11 kids.
He is.
Oh, it's crazy. Lord, it's crazy. Yeah. But anyway, so he said, you know, we are here now, and this is to show that it's not business as usual in Washington. And, like, it's... It's just, how many times do we have to go through this, or the American public have to just be, you know, sold something that is not business as usual from the people who did do it business as usual not more than 4 years ago, and then Obama and the Democrats come in 2, 4, whatever years ago and say, we're, you know, yes, we can, it's change we can believe in, and not the same old stuff, and suddenly now they are the same old stuff, and it's like, it's a revolving door of change. I mean, it's nothing new that people have heard, but yeah. it's just frustrating, and it's just so obvious, you know, like that have them come in and say, "Oh, we're now in charge of the House of Representatives, and we're not going to do. It's not going to be the same business as usual in Washington." But the Republicans, by nature, is one of the same. You know, both parties are by nature the same as usual. You know,
absolutely. Like, until there's a third party in there that actually has a chance that can break the mold. You're totally right, and it takes them a long time just to reverse all the crap that the last guys put through, and that takes time. You know, you got to do that in tandem with all the stuff, the new stuff you want to do,
right?
And it, but personally, I think it's the American public that are at fault here, because as bad as Republicans are and all that, it's hard to say because so many people are going through such bad time, and I don't mean it as an insult, but they're so impatient, and their attention span is just so flippant. You know what I mean? Like they're like, okay, we're tired of this. I'm gonna put this new guy in, and within like 60 days, he's got to do all the things I want him to do. You know?
Right.
And he told them over and over again, it's not, you know, like maybe by the end of the first term, we might be onto something, but you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that's so significant. And I don't think people down there are really understanding that. They're just expecting. I mean, don't get me wrong. He had a lot of promises, but look what he's already done.
Yeah.
I mean, he put through healthcare, like some sort of healthcare bill, no matter how watered down it got. I mean, they would never be able to pass what he or others may have originally wanted. I mean, it just wasn't going to fly. Mm. But I think if you actually take all the smoke screen out of it and stuff, you actually had a list in front of you of the things he's done, I think people would be kind of surprised, personally. But anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's that one.
Number four.
I predict that the new BC Liberal leader will be Christy Clark. That's my prediction. It's going to happen.
I don't disagree. I don't know if it's the right thing. But then, like I said, all I know, I've never listened to her talk show. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm working. So it's, it's on during the day, right?
Yeah.
So like Bill Good show's on during the day too, right? Like it's not, she's not like a drive time, so it doesn't happen in, you know, when you're driving to or coming home from work.
Right.
But sorry, I leaned in it. I don't know if the mic caught all that. But anyways, but all I know is, and I've said this to you like off the podcast as we've just chatted, is that all I remember is of her in her time in politics when she was in the opposition. She did nothing but whine and complain and say how awful the government was.
Right.
And then she got into government and she whined and complained at how awful the opposition was. And I'm like, you're in power now. You should be positive, or, you know, talk about things or be constructive. Like,
yeah,
you know, and it was, I was actually, you know, again, as a, not a terribly focused political, you know, observer at that time, was kind of glad when she left and like we were talking, like maybe over time she's changed considerably, because when you're in that job as a radio broadcaster talking to people, you actually have to listen to people.
Yes, for real.
For real, because otherwise, you know, you'll never, you're a bad interview, you're bad on the radio if you don't listen to what people are saying and riff on it and ask to unpack things that are interesting and move on from things when people are just going off in tangents, right?
Yeah.
When you're in government, you don't have to. Even when you're in opposition, you don't have to listen to what people, because you're talking over each other the whole time, right? So hopefully that skill has lent it to her well. And that's part of why I look forward to going next Wednesday, is hearing from these people with these candidates outside of the shackles of being in the premier's cabinet, which, you know, I mean, this provincial government and the federal government in Ottawa right now, people complain it's very much top heavy, right? It's all controlled by the prime minister or the premier. And so So, like, when the federal government did that shuffle recently, the only minister who spoke was the prime minister. No one else spoke. You know, I mean, so it'd be interesting to actually hear these people talk more. And they have been talking because they're all campaigning and they're talking about, you know, oh, we should have turnstiles finally. Really? And we should extend the hours of SkyTrain.
Thanks, Falcon.
Yeah. How many years were you minister of transport and now you're taking out of your back pocket? Like, I mean...
That's, you know, that's a good point, because right now what I find is really stunning is that it's like you're saying that the top heavy, right? And there's no new fresh ideas. Like, there's no one being like, hey, well, we should try, you know, the big guy's gone. And I can't believe some of the ideas coming out of these candidates' mouths, right? Like the one example mm-hmm. you just gave, the voting 16 age. You can't even believe it. It's like they're throwing shit at the wall. What's gonna get me votes? I mean, it's yeah. almost pandering. Like,
yeah,
I think it's kind of depressing that when they're actually in power, they can't be so free to, just brainstorm
yeah.
more publicly. Like, and whenever someone dares to, they're put to the backbenches or they're
right
suspended or so. I mean, who knows, right? So I think that's a good point.
So yeah, so I really don't know. Who knows? I mean,
it's hard to say, but I think she, you know, they say, oh, all the other candidates have a lot of other, like, MLAs behind them and stuff.
Right.
Well, who cares?
Because it has to do with one member, one vote, right?
Yeah. So, I think that whole thing is just like, okay, good for you, but that's a lot of those people are the people that people don't like right now. You know what I mean? Right. Like, anyway, so that was that prediction. And the last one, I don't think there will be a federal election in this coming year.
Really?
Nope.
Really?
I don't.
Why?
It's largely based on an article I read by some pundit, I think on Globe and Mail, said something similar. It got me thinking because, you know, you always hear about spring or fall, right? Doesn't happen during the holidays very often because they can't get people to vote. In the summer, people on vacation. So two options left, spring or fall. Spring, yeah. Well, I don't think the Liberals are ready. I think their poll numbers are awful, and I think Ignatieff sucks in that role. And, I mean, who cares about the NDP? And the Conservatives are like, they did the shuffle to get ready just in case.
Right.
Or they might actually just call an early one. I could see that happening. Capitalize on good polling numbers. But I don't think they're that risky. And I understand that sometime later in the, I don't know, like late summer, early fall or something, Ontario provincial election is going to happen.
Oh, is it?
And you never, I mean, you do a federal election the same year as PEI, but you don't at the same time as like one of the big provinces,
well,
right?
Because you need to win that province federally to win government in any form at all. So
yeah
I didn't even think they were having an election in Ontario. So, yeah.
So I think they're just going to keep coasting. They've been a minority government for, well, this is the fifth year. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, 5 years they've been a minority government. And so why?
You know, and I think, I'm going to say, I think you're right.
But, we didn't disagree on anything?
We didn't disagree much. I think the only thing that would happen is there's some issue that, you know, like you're saying, like, they can throw all this and see what sticks, right? Throw it all against the wall and just see what happens when you talk about the provincial Liberals and their leadership. The same thing with the federal Liberals and trying to figure out how when not to call an election. They will call an, they will trigger an election, sorry, not call it, they'll trigger it if some issue sticks. I mean, the only issue that has remotely stuck at all is the long-form census thing. But yeah. My gut is I don't think the political establishment and the pundits think, and I don't think the public thinks that's enough to punish a government, a minority government,
right?
And at this stage, the only thing you can hope for is a minority government from another party.
Exactly. You know? And people are like, why bother?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, you know, this minority government, you know, we may not love them, but they're in a minority government, so it keeps them in check. They won't go too crazy on us.
Yeah.
And if we do another expensive election that I won't pay attention to anyways, unless there's an issue that really gets me excited.
Right.
Or gets really angry or fearful. Even the economy isn't a fearful topic in this country, right? And then, you know, the worst that could happen is we change from the liberal conservative minority to liberal minority, and then the same difference.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're going to be checked out just a little bit more on the left than on the right, you know? It's like, why bother?
Yep, I agree fully. Well, that was fun. Oh, man. Well, that was good. Well, I'm glad we did that. Cause...
I think my prediction is Preston Manning will be... No, just kidding.
The look of horror on my face. I was thinking, where are we going with that? But, you know, then there's the other predictions.
Who do you think...
Yeah.
I can ask you this.
Okay, yeah.
Who do you think will be the Republican nominee against Obama?
Michael Steele.
He's not even going to win the re-election as a chairman,
I don't think. No, I said that because there was an article out there saying that, you know, he's really trying to ramp up his profile or whatever. But, it's... Do you mean...
I guess my question is...
Who's going to win the nomination to go against?
Yeah.
Like, ultimately?
Yeah, do you have a sense? Do you think? Like, I was watching this week with Christiane Amanpour. There was a guest.
Yeah.
It was a guest... A guest anchor, and he's nowhere near as good as Christiane Amanpour.
Oh, really? Yeah, guest anchor?
Yeah, because, you know, like, she was on holidays or something, right? Because it's Christmas, right? It was like...
Oh, right, okay.
But they were talking about Republican nominees, and they were talking about names I'd never heard of, right? Some governors and whatever, so...
Yeah.
But I guess my question is, do you think Sarah Palin will run?
Oh, I think she'll try for, like, a primary or two.
You think she will?
I think she will. Mm. I honestly think that. But she's not going to get very far. I think there are a lot of places in the States that would just be like, no, thank you. I really do. And even the places that scream really loud, I think some of them are fringe. Or, for lack of a better term, like, in other words, like, they scream loud, but there's not a lot of them.
Right, yeah.
As for going against Obama, I really don't know. I know it's not going to be Palin. It's not going to be Michael Steele. I've been reading also about, like, governors or, you know, ex-military guys or, you know, things like that coming up and trying to, you know, they do certain town hall, like, typical town halls before New Hampshire or whatever,
right,
you know,
because
that's starting, huh? Like,
yeah.
This is the year where it starts to ramp. I mean...
Yeah. Well, people are saying, like, at this time, you know, for the last election, it was only a matter of weeks that Clinton and Senator Obama put out that they were going to run.
They were
going to
run, yeah.
And
so that would have been 2007.
Yeah, and so people, you know, and this is the political on this week again. On the political panel, they were saying, like, you know, I guess, you know, we're just, you know, we're bored here. We want someone to say something so we can start talking about it.
Well, I have two thoughts. One is they're going to try really hard to find someone that people have heard of. You know, like, they're going to, like, a Boehner type, like someone that's kind of...
Fake tent?
Fake tan.
I just
very
talk
emotional
about that.
You know, they're gonna try and find someone that has been a, like, a governor, someone who's been a face of the Republicans somewhere along the line. Or because Sarah Palin just came out of, like, where the hell does she come from, right? And when that happened, I was like, really? Like, really? And all of a sudden we start finding out all about her, right?
Yep.
Well, I think that's also a possibility. There's someone that's just going to come in from wherever that the Republicans say, okay, we're all going to get behind her. you know?
Right.
But the problem is, there's not a lot of trust between some part of the Republicans and a lot of the Tea Partiers.
Right.
And I think that's going to be a problem for them, I think. I don't think it's going to be as simple as just finding that candidate. I think they've got a lot of stuff to figure out internally first.
Right.
I think that's why they haven't found anyone yet.
Well, it's like there's a, you know, it always seems to, I mean, like they talk about sort of, there's always political swings, right? And there's the mood of the American public that swings with that same swing. And there's always a split, you know, the part of the political spectrum that isn't split always wins. I mean, that's just the way math works, right? Mm-hmm. And right now, the conservative side of the political spectrum is split in the United States because there is this Tea Party versus Republican thing going on.
Right.
And then in Canada, it's the exact flip. There's a split on the left, you know, with the Liberals and the Greens and the NDP and the Bloc, and it's just crazy messed up, pixelated on that side, right? And makes it even more complicated. So, and you know, and they were talking about, you know, BC politics, you know, the NDP right. has been so split with the Greens, much much more so here, right? Because the Greens are much stronger here. So the Liberals just continue to coast to majority governments, and
sure.
And you know, maybe now there's a split between, you know, the Liberals and that new BC whatever part that came out of the HSD protest movement, right? Who knows, right?
Oh, the BC Conservatives?
There's the anti-HST stuff. There's a political party that formed from that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from that movement, right? And it's definitely more, I think, right-focused in terms of the political switch, from my understanding. So there is starting to be a tiny little split. It probably won't be much of a split, right? I think once the Liberals choose a new leader and there'll be some sort of, you know, bringing together of that part of the world, the political world, and then the NDP, you know, just, they could have got their act together. They could have just, you know, done something with that unity, but they might just end up being split again too, you know, so who knows? You just want to be on the side where it isn't split. And right now it's split on the Conservative Tea Party, you're right.
Completely. No, I agree fully with that. I think
people who want tension are not going to get it today.
You know, we gotta find an issue that isn't Terri Schiavo, or something like that. That you know that we disagree on. I think we'll find it. But yeah, no, that's really funny. We're a lot alike. I think, you know,
we are.
I mean, I think. Just because of our common interests and I think culturally, like the what we gravitate towards culturally, I think makes a big difference.
And you're more Chinese than I am.
yes, but no, I actually kind of meant like arts and culture. Oh, you knew that. Okay. Sorry. Not being able to read each other that well these days. But
I had to throw that facetious comment in.
Well, I have been known to you know, display those, you know, cultural qualities, so to speak. Because I don't really... It's so easy for me to say that I don't have any culture, but I mean, I don't have any specific cultural reference to draw upon, let's say that. Other than being Western. But yeah, so.
And your Scandinavian blood?
Well, there is my Scandinavian blood, and I've been looking into that more and trying to understand that a bit more. Understand that history, because apparently it goes way, way, way back. But I don't know much about it. But I will learn.
So we're at 1 hour and 4 minutes. I think we did well. I mean,
yeah. We had a lot to get out.
Yeah. But so I guess we don't have any time for, you know, too much around what happened for this year, the past year, 2010. But, I mean, I mean, we may not record another one of these for months. So 2010 will be like a way, way, way distant memory.
And who knows when this podcast will be online.
Yes. Ouch.
It's January 6th right now. Just keep that in mind.
Right. But, I mean, is there something from 2010, anything, you know, could be political or whatever, mm-hmm. and you don't have to explain too much about it, but, because we don't have, well, we have all the time in the world, really, but in the end, we don't have a lot of time.
Right. Yeah.
Is there something that really sticks out about 2010 for you? Like, anything.
You know, I want to say the BP oil spill.
Okay.
Because... and I won't make this long-winded, but last big spill that you and I kind of remember was the Exxon Valdez.
Yeah.
And it's been like, what, 20 odd years?
Yeah, in the 80s, 89
it's like
or 80, something?
80, 89. Yeah. So, you know, for me, when the BP thing happened, I thought, oh, okay, you know, it exploded, there's going to be some oil. But at first I didn't give it a lot of thought. I thought, okay... You know, we hear about, you know, spills here and there. But then, and it just seemed to just be this huge story, and oil's everywhere, and, you know, you see the maps of, like, how far it's spreading out. And I started to get really angry about it because of that one thing where someone said, well, what happened was not supposed to happen, you know? And, like... When they have an operation that complicated and that intricate and that scientifically crazy, and they drill oil from 2 miles below sea level or whatever, and they go and they take all these precautions and they have all these things in place for what ended up happening not to happen, right?
Right.
It just goes to show that there's no guarantee about anything. And that, I felt a sense of vulnerability from that. Because we have so many, especially in the Northeast, we have so many refinery, like offshore drilling.
Right.
And they might not be on the same scale as that BP one, but we have lots of them, and they, you know, I just think that it's really crazy the kind of we're still striving to look for more oil when that same emphasis isn't on alternative fuels. Like, there's lots of people doing it, but the people that really need to be on it aren't, like government and this and that. So that's what really kind of made me really angry about it. And so that, and it after a few months, it kind of, like, after they capped it, the story kind of disappeared. That's the one that always jumps out at me.
Well, there's two things about that, and we're just going to go on.
We're just going to...
This is too interesting. But, like, the one thing I remember is and it's more about science. I think you sort of touched on a couple of things. Like, one is, and I remember hearing this, and this is the two things about this oil spill that really struck me, was one, that it reminded us about the hubris we have. Or partly it's hubris, but the other part, it's more about the too much faith we have in technology and science to solve our problems. And you saw that for months, that engineers just couldn't get that thing to cap. And it was spilling every day, and you saw that footage.
Right.
And people were getting frustrated and angry. Why can't you solve this? Just plug that damn hole. Well, it's not that easy. And, you know, you said it's a complicated mess. I mean, how much, you know, things have to be just perfectly right and all these safeguards to actually be able to construct this gigantic platform that drills how many hundreds of kilometers or whatever the distance is down into the earth to bring up this oil. Like, yeah. It's a complicated thing to do. And if it goes wrong, then why were we expecting a simple solution?
Yeah,
to solve it. Like, it's complicated to begin with. It's going to be complicated to solve. So it reminded us that we're not as brilliant as we think we are around technology and solving
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, like, they had a top 10 stories on the National about science, and the science reporter, Bob McDonald, was sort of saying that, you know, one of the problems and why it's going to be an ongoing story for generations is that, you know, near the end, they were blowing the, some sort of chemical thing onto the oil spill.
Right.
And all that was doing was sort of dispersing it, and then it would just fall down to the ocean floor. So,
the
you
chemical
know,
matter?
Or, mean, yeah, or whatever they're spraying onto the oil to just get rid of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they were trying to suck up as much of it and, right. you know, and whatever. But in the end, a lot of what they did, I don't know how much of it, was spraying some chemical that broke up the oil so it wasn't floating and you didn't see that kerosene kind of
right.
thing on the oil. And it just plummeted all down. And so the ocean looks clean and it did protect a lot of the wetlands and the things that needed protecting. But now there's a lot of residual stuff just onto the bottom of the floor, and we know
at the floor
we know very little about the bottom of the ocean, right, and I mean, who knows what's going to happen generations from now when, you know, what's going to affect down there will affect, you know, all the life in the ocean in some way or form or another, because we just don't know. Again, part of what we just don't know, right? So he's like,
yeah.
It's an important story for 2010, but it's also going to be an important story for the years to come, right? So that's when you said the oil spill, that's what sort of comes to my mind.
That's interesting. Because you're right, they know, like, the only part of the Earth they really haven't mapped out very much of is the deep sea.
And there's apparently this is a cool little thing happening from the University of Victoria, and they're mapping that as a little portion of the Pacific Ocean, and apparently it's very interesting.
Oh, that's
I don't
really
know
cool.
the... I don't know the link, but I don't even know the name of it, but he sort of mentioned that too, the same story. This is like, he said the same thing, like, we know more about the surface of Mars than we do about the bottom of the ocean. So, yeah, it's kind of cool when you think about it. So.
That is funny when you think about it that way, yeah. Well, that's interesting, yeah. Oh, I'm sure this story won't go away.
Yeah. But my, and I'll try to be short, because I've mentioned this before. My big thing about 2010, and I hadn't even thought about it, and I had to think about what would I say if I was going to ask you that question, so I figured I might have to have an answer too.
Right.
And I have to say what has impacted me, and I don't know how long it will have an impact, is, and again, like I said, we've talked about this before, is the surprise that I had in terms of discovering the value there was of actually hosting the Olympic Games.
Oh. Like,
and it was very interesting because you and I know, we've talked about this, you know, many times in our podcasting about the Olympics coming here.
Mm-hmm.
And what is surprising to me is that we aren't having the kind of dialogue that I think we should be having.
No.
Because it's now it's over and now it's, you know, been there, done that. It's almost a year ago now that the Olympics were here. And I think now it's the time where we should be having the same kind of debates we had before.
Yeah.
Because now we know what the value was of actually hosting this 2-week event. And I don't think it's about tourism. I don't think it's about the economic impact. And it's not, for sure, not about the questionable statement that the Olympics broke even. You know,
that's rigged. I know. Yeah.
Vanock broke even. I'm sure that's true. But hosting the Olympics is not a break even endeavor.
No.
You know, I think now is a great time where you can have that discussion. It's been here. It's done. Everyone experienced it. Everyone saw what happened to the city and the value that isn't quantifiable. Like, there was a lot of pride. There was a lot of unique experiences that happened. We learned a lot about what this community can do when it comes together in celebration. All that stuff that isn't quantifiable in economic numbers and GDP and that sort of stuff. It'd be so interesting to have this discussion now and within the next couple of years to see whether or not that value of that experience has a long impact in any way, whatever way that is. Because you can complain about the value of this money going towards building venues and going towards, you know, building skating rinks and building athletes' villages and the Canada Line, and complain that it should go to homelessness, affordable housing, healthcare, all interesting points. But you didn't know what that investment was going to give you. But now we know. We saw it. We felt it for 2 weeks. It was It was a wild ride if you just let yourself get into it, right? And you have those mitts and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so that to me was a surprise of 2010. Not to say that I'm a huge Olympic fan, but that I understood what the value, what the experience actually is when you host it. And I think we should be having that discussion now, but we're not. And no one wants, no one is remotely interested in having the discussion. So.
Well, I think that there's a lot of suffering from Olympic fatigue.
Yeah.
An overload of the senses. But I think you're right. I think, you know, a lot of anchors keep talking about this. Like, I think it's the time, and I hate to sound like this, but when the country kind of got to know itself a bit more, you know what I mean? Like, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there was a little bit self-grandizing, a little bit too. Yeah. Like, there was a lot of stuff, like, you know, national pride and blah, blah, blah. You know, that's...
But I think there's something to be said for that, though. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I really, you know... It's like it stirred that debate of was it French enough and this and right. that. And I think it was French enough, personally. But, you know, like, it's really hard to explain. I think a lot of people kind of realized what an amazing province we are. And you know, it might be from those You Gotta Be Here commercials. Who knows?
Right.
Which are really cheesy. But anything... broadcast in front of the government's going to be cheesy, but I think that really rang through, you know, like
I think you're getting to the core of it. Like, I think that's where there's value. And the reason what I was going to say was, like, you know, like during the games, they had these little like video montages on TV and they made the Canadian ish thing to be, you know, we found ourselves. We didn't know. Oh, well, I think we kind of knew who we were before. We just had we found a voice to articulate it in a way that was, not grating, but kind of endearing, a little bit loud, but, you know, and but also welcome. You know, like, we found what that voice was, and we could talk more about who we are than who we aren't. Like, it started that process, right? And I think what people talk about now is, oh, well, we've gone back to the no fun city. Look, we have these big parties, and now we're still not hosting things for New Year's Eve, and there's no fireworks, and like, you're missing the point. I mean, yes, that's something we have to talk about in terms of we know we can do it and we can do it responsibly.
Right.
That's when you have, you know, thousands of extra rent-a-cops in town to, you know, keep the peace. And they did it very well, have to say.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And we've talked about that too.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's really about, you know, whether or not we're back to no fun city, but I think it's about what you talked about. And is that going to have an impact on this community, on British Columbia, on Canada? Is there going to be a geographic impact for the long term, or is there going to be a generational impact for the long term that will, that will actually have ripple effects, because people will tell their kids and their kids and their, you know, and then, you know, this voice will start to not just be a one-time thing, but over time, like, who knows, right? But now it's a point where we can actually start talking about that in relation to the broader sense of cost benefit. It was very one-sided before because you didn't know. You're talking about, well, what's the value of this expense? We don't know. But now we kind of are starting to get there. So that to me was the very interesting little thing that happened in 2010 that got me thinking. So.
Well, that's actually something that I'm sure we'll probably come back to, just because as time goes on, it's like you said, it's like we're not in the afterglow anymore. We're kind of in, you know, where we forgot what we were supposed to be figuring out, you know, or how leading up to the Olympics, there was this, oh, wow, it was almost like you couldn't imagine post-Olympic life.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean?
That's right.
It's that, like, whoa. True. We're going to get to the day when the Olympics actually had happened already, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think the first couple of weeks after the Olympics, it was all like, wow, that was, like, imagine that, you know? Like, we actually got through it, and traffic wasn't that crazy.
Traffic was great.
Yeah.
Well, waiting for the 22 bus was a bit annoying, but, you know, otherwise.
I think we could probably look back on, find in one of the podcasts, I think I was ranting about, you know, I thought it would be bad traffic and a lot of people, like, you know, really huddled together and like where are we going, like that whole thing, but it didn't happen, and the cops were great, like you said. So I think that's a good point. And I think it's just, you know, people just, it's just like anything else, you know, people just move on and they're, and I think it's also about kind of like a, I hate to use the word spiritual, but it is kind of like that. It's because it's like what you take from it for yourself in your mind, what I do in my mind, because I was so like, I don't know about this. You know, I was very, like, I voted no. I was like, I think this is, this just outlines how messed up our priorities are and so on and so on. But, you know, you did, I did, and all of us did. We cheered super hard when what's his face got the gold medal, hockey gold.
What's his face?
Sidney Crosby. You know, and that people wanted storybook. They wanted fairy tale. They wanted, you know what I mean? Yeah. They wanted that moment, and it happened. Like, it really did happen. I mean, it couldn't have happened better.
Yeah.
Considering we almost lost it. I mean, so that's, I think people got that and they're like, okay, I just ejaculated. you know? But serious, like, it's like a mass ejaculation that happened, and now they can relax and they can start to move on. I think we haven't really found that part where we come back to it yet. I think is sort of what you're saying. I don't mean to be, you know, too grotesque or anything, but...
See, if I was a little bit more, I would say, I would use that one phrase as the title of this podcast, but I don't think I can type out that word and have it online with my face somewhere near the banner. So that's not going to happen. But the last thing I'll say is, you know, what I found really interesting too is that, you know, there's a lot of the same sort of stuff that happened in terms of the debate for Expo 86, you know, think about it that historically. Mm-hmm. And I just find it really interesting, like, you know, I think about Expo 86 so fondly because I was 9 years old, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know, and now we've experienced this in our early 30s, which is a very different way of experiencing this and thinking about those issues. Like, I just wonder about what the next thing will be, let's say, you know, 20 years from now when we, I don't know, host the Martians coming or something, or, you know, I don't know what it will be, and what we will think about it at that time is it's, you know, we experience things in the time and the stage in which we can process it. And I just think it's really fascinating. But anyways.
No, I agree.
So we're now at an hour and 21 minutes and 22 minutes. But I think that was worth it. Just get that in, because otherwise we will not get it in otherwise.
No, I agree.
Hopefully people who've downloaded it onto their iPods have had a chance to dust their entire house while listening to it, or cook a 10-course meal instead of a 4-course meal, you know, things like that.
I hope most people have room on their iPod for this one. Yes. Okay, well, we'll end it here, for real. Yes. For reals.
Until the next time in July.
Nope, February, here we come.
Okay.
February 2011.
Okay.
So thanks for listening. Find us at www.thedotmatrix.com. And
on iTunes, search for us there too. And
we have a Facebook group.
Right, we're all over the place.
Yeah, so
we're all on this interweb stuff.
Yeah, we know how to handle it all now. So
awesome! Till the next time.
Okay, bye bye.
See ya.